Hello, Vet Blast podcast listeners. Did you notice you can earn 0.25 CE credits with this podcast? After listening to this podcast, head on over to dvm360.com/flex and then sign in or register for a free account. Then select the podcast and follow the online prompts to claim your CE.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We want to give a big shout out and thank you to our friends at Elanco for supporting this great episode as we chat about the new guidelines in the management of canine parvovirus with the one and only Dr. Fred Metzger. How are you, my friend?
Adam, great. How's it going? Always a pleasure to see you.
Yeah, such a pleasure to see you too. And as you and I know, we're going to be chatting about something that I truly do think it is a game changer with how we go about managing this nasty infectious disease. And to our wonderful listeners that are tuning in, a little bit of information about an awesome colleague, Dr. Metzger. He's an 86 graduate of the Purdue College of Veterinary Medicine and a diplomat of the American Board of Veterinary Practitioners. He's an adjunct professor at Pennsylvania State University and co-authored Clinical Pathology, Interpretation in Geriatric Veterinary Patients and a Guide to Hematology in Dogs and Cats. Dr. Metzger received the Outstanding Alumni Award from Penn State University in 2016 and received the Distinguished Alumni Award from Purdue College of Veterinary Medicine in 2022. He's a medical director of the VCA Metzger Animal Hospital, a 13-doctor, 98-team AHA-certified general referral and 24-hour emergency hospital in State College, Pennsylvania. And just recently, in October 2022, Dr. Metzger formed Laboratory Retrievers, a clinical pathology education advisory company with his mentors, Dr. Dennis DeNicola and Dr. Alan Rebar. I love that name. Every time I see
that. Adam, I'm so happy you said that. I woke up in the middle of the night, but I'm like, what can we call this company? Because, I mean, I'm working with two of the greatest clinical pathologists in the world and my teachers and mentors, which is a dream. But, you know, really, we are about laboratory testing and bringing it to practitioners and being able to use it. So that's why the name's kind of fun. And it really describes what we're doing.
Right. It really is. I love it. It's perfect. All right, so let's chat a little bit about this. So in your area in practice, you see and your share of parvovirus, I'm sure. So how common is this disease?
Well, here's the thing with parvo and why I'm excited about something new. First of all, we all have such a stigma about parvo, me included. And you know, when you own a practice, you're like, and you're doing ER, you hear, oh God, someone called in and they think they have a parvo. So we do everything in our means to avoid that. And that's not cool, all right?
Right.
There's several things. One is, these are generally puppies, of course. This is one of the most serious diseases we see. And the problem is, it's the triple whammy of all diseases. Number one is it's in puppies. Two, it's got severe ramifications, leukopenia, hypoglycemia, electrolyte problems, vomiting and diarrhea for days. And it's going to spread this virus, which is hard to kill, all through our clinic.
Yeah.
So no wonder we try to avoid it. But what's really sad is, and I've been guilty of this, I'm sure, in the past, where you get that call at, you know, 10 o'clock at night and you want them to go somewhere else. That's not cool, man. These are the animals that need intensive care. And I think we discriminate is what I'm saying. We hear that word. Yeah. We're like, we don't want these people to come in. They're not going to pay the bill. They're not. I mean, that's all ridiculous. And the way I look at a parvo case, this is like a septic animal that we've had on chemo. Like, we wouldn't put an animal on chemo and now they're ill and they're septic and not treat them. So I think we need to get rid of the stigma about parvo. I'm hoping the new monoclonal treatment will give us something in our arsenal. And I'm convinced that as a practice owner, a lot of our staff members, especially technicians, look at us. And I think we look really bad when we tell the client, oh, don't come in. We don't really want to treat a parvo patient. That's why we're veterinarians. Like, this animal requires the most treatment. They're very challenging and they're puppies. I mean, come on. Right. So I think this could change things. I'm hoping that the monoclonal antibody will give us a much better drug, something actually approved, and we can shorten this hospitalization stay. And a lot of times, let's be honest, we're treating them as outpatients, maybe not always in the best way, but I think the monoclonal gives us an opportunity to treat a lot of these animals as outpatients, or at least shorten the hospitalization stay.
Yeah, definitely shorten hospitalization stay would be fantastic. I want to talk a little bit about diagnosing it too. We have access to in-hospital point of care testing to confirm this diagnosis. Is it always a SNAP, or are we missing cases of parvovirus?
Great question. You know, you would think, oh, parvo is pretty easy to diagnose. Well, not always. And here's why. We all know the ELISA tests are very good. They're going to detect the antigen, all right? So there, it's pretty straightforward. There can be false negatives, though. And in fact, if you get parvo kind of late in the course of disease, or you have a puppy with severe diarrhea that's diluting the virus out, it is possible to have a false negative. I'm always going to recommend that we're going to do the minimum database, hematology, chemistry, and electrolytes in a parvo puppy for a couple reasons. One is, if the ELISA is positive for parvo and you have a low white count, great, let's treat parvo. We're all on board for that. If the parvo ELISA is negative and you have a low white count, you're going to want to do another either ELISA test or maybe something more sensitive like a PCR test for parvo, which could actually be done on blood or fecal material. But I want to use everything together because I don't know about you, Adam, I'm so old now. I never like the whole hear hoofbeats and think of horses. I think of zebras and I always will. So if I have a dog that or a puppy that's negative on the parvo ELISA and the white count's normal, I'm going to already start thinking of other things. All right. Maybe it's not parvo. But once again, putting the whole picture together, and this is where hematology, which is our best friend in vet med, can be a huge help. Most parvo dogs, especially in the early stages, are going to be very leukopenic. Their white counts are going to be very low. The one thing I would say I would like people to remember with the zebra comment I just made, just because it looks like parvo, and it's if it's ELISA negative on parvo and the white count's low, and you're like, well, it's got to be parvo, the test is wrong, I would also think of several other diseases that you want to put in the back of your mind. One would be salmonella. It can look very similar to parvo. And the other thing would be intussusception or foreign body. It can look a lot like parvo. So those things are always in the back of my mind on any parvo patient. And they should be in the back of your mind as well.
And with your passion for clinical pathology, so you talked about ELISA, we talked about like blood and fecal testing. Are there additional diagnostic tests too that might be beneficial when working up or managing a parvo case?
Absolutely. Even if we've used the ELISA to diagnose parvo, we have a strong positive. Hey, great, that's what it is. You really want to remember to run the chemistry profile and electrolytes too, because a lot of these guys are going to be hypoglycemic. Right? You got a puppy with poor glucose reserves. They're vomiting. They have diarrhea. They haven't eaten for a couple of days. They can really have a problem with hypoglycemia, hypokalemia. Any of the electrolyte abnormalities are usually very severe. And then certainly on the leukogram changes, you look for the neutropenia, the lymphopenia. And some of these dogs can also have thrombocytopenia if they're headed towards DIC. So what I'm trying to say is, unless money's an object, which it frequently is, although frequently it's in our brain that it's a problem, you really want to do the minimum database, CBC, chemistry, electrolytes, and a urine if you can, with the parvo ELISA. And the other thing, please do not forget to run a good GI parasite test. That seems intuitive, but a lot of times we have parvo and we have another problem, even roundworms, hookworms, coccidia. And I'll tell you where I'm headed on the fecal land. That could be a whole nother podcast. I really do like, if possible, the fecal PCR. There's a lot of false negatives when you're doing fecal floats. You can miss a lot of stuff. And even on the fecal antigen test, there are some things that you're going to miss. So please keep GI parasites, intussusception, and salmonella on your list on these puppies. Because the problem is, if you miss any of those things management-wise, you could miss some critical information, i.e. hypoglycemia, hypokalemia, et cetera. And yeah, a lot of these puppies are going to require broad-spectrum antibiotics, especially if they're neutropenic or leukopenic.
Yeah, that's a great differential list to keep on top of mind there, for sure. I like that a lot. And, you know, you talked earlier about some of the pain points that we've had in our hospital, knowing like, oh my gosh, we have a parvo coming in. Let's not take them in, or we worry about transmit or making it highly infectious and transmissible to other patients. What are some other pain points behind treating the disease of parvo?
I think there's so many pain points. One is in our mind, because we've all been burned so many times financially, we're like, oh, well, I don't even want to get them into the hospital. Like I said, we got to get over that. That's not right. That's why we're vets. Yeah. Two is in our hospital, I built a beautiful isolation area. It was probably cost me $20,000. However, I'll come in the hospital Monday morning. There'll be a puppy in the hospital and it's a parvo suspect. And I'm like, what's going on? The problem is when we have a separate isolation area, which I'm all for, a lot of time the puppies are isolated. They're not being observed as they probably would should be if they're sitting in your hospital. Certainly disinfection, foot baths, all those things are going to be important in the parvo suspect, because clearly we should be worried about exposing our other patients, and it can be fomite transmitted. I mean, this is a virus that is hard to kill. It can live for several weeks. So the big thing is, if you're going to go and treat parvo patients and they're very clinical, you got to go all in with IV fluid therapy. And one thing that I like about the monoclonal parvo, antibody is it's an IV test or it's an IV treatment. So at least we're going to put an IV in these animals. And even if we're going to treat them as outpatients, we can treat them with the parvo monoclonal antibody and give them a good bolus of fluids for half an hour if we decide to treat them as outpatients. And I think this new product does give us a possibility of shortening the hospitalization stay and maybe treating some of these as outpatients that we would normally want to keep at the hospital. Manpower is a big thing. Our staff is going to require a lot of staff time, which is the other thing. I find the technicians are so much better than the veterinarians at treating parvo patients, because they're like, these are puppies. These are our most, precious patients. And I think that's what I want us to start thinking about again, really what we're doing. They require a lot of work and a lot of tender, loving care. And, we need to get a little bit better at providing that. And I think this product will help us.
Yeah, let's talk more about this product, because this is exciting. And, we're pretty much familiar with the concept of monoclonal antibodies, but specifically, what is the target of CPMA?
So this is a monoclonal antibody similar to some of the products that we use for allergy, the monthly inject, which I absolutely love. The other thing we've used for quite a long time in our practice is the IgG antibody for immune-mediated hemolytic anemia, where we give it IV and kind of shuts down the process. So what they're trying to do with the parvo monoclonal antibody is to attach onto that virus and prevent it from invading into the crypts, the intestinal crypts. And if we can prevent that, then we're going to prevent a large part of the disease. Now, with parvo, the virus actually enters the enterocytes, then it's going to get into some of the bone marrow cells and even some of the myocardial cells. So it depends on where we get into this disease. If we can treat it quickly as possible, we might be able to prevent the replication in the GI tract, which could shut the whole thing down. My suspicion is some of these dogs are going to be a couple days into it. They're already going to have some vomiting and diarrhea. So I think we still can shorten the disease pretty significantly. But the whole point is the sooner the better, because if we can get these puppies in right away and get that monoclonal antibody, we should be able to shorten the disease very quickly and really get it down to a couple days instead of maybe a week or two.
So that's a very unique strategy. In all my years of practicing with parvovirus, I never would have imagined to say, oh, just in a couple of days, we'll be able to shorten the treatment process of it. So that's a very unique strategy. And I want to kind of know a little bit more about that in terms of, as a general practitioner, they come in and, we're diagnosing parvovirus. What do we say to the clients knowing that, okay, we're going to give them this injection? What can they expect?
I think time will tell. I think we're so early with this product. We don't know yet, but here's what I suspect will happen. Right now with parvovirus, as we're treating symptomatically. We have nothing to stop it. The puppies are coming in. We're putting them on IV fluids. We're telling the clients, God, I hope they make it. Here's our estimate. They're going to need to be in the hospital for several days with intensive therapy. With this new product, and I think we have to be cautious in the beginning, but theoretically, the way this product should work, this is actually a treatment for the disease. So right now, without the product. You know, we have a burning car along the road that we're trying to put out with a fire hose. With this product, if we can get the disease earlier, we're hopefully going to stop the disease before it even really gets started, which is going to be changing everything for these puppies. The other thing I wanted to say is that we've learned with Parvo this year specifically, we've had more dogs come through our ER now that are older dogs with Parvo. And I'm talking 8 months, a year of age, and you might be like, why is that? What we're seeing is because of COVID, a lot of the dogs didn't get their full complement of vaccines. We've seen several dogs in the last month that are a year old that have Parvo. Wow. I mean, that's interesting. So
yeah.
I think this disease needs to go on our list a little bit higher. And we also know how expensive it is for the poor clients. And I think with the monoclonal antibody, and once again, we're in the early stages. I mean, things are going to change. And as we learn more about it, we'll know more. But I'm hoping if it shortens the hospitalization stay, which it should pretty dramatically, it should bring the cost of Parvo down. And if it's easier to treat and we can do it more outpatient, I think we can prevent this horrible stigma, which we all have towards the poor Parvo puppy and the owner of this poor puppy, where we don't even want him to come in. I mean, that's not cool. We got to get over that. So hopefully if we have a decent treatment, we can shorten it. We can be heroes. It's like when we have an Addison case, right? Yes, I'll take that one all day. I want to be the hero on that one. I think the new treatment could let us be heroes again. And I think it's really important how your staff looks at you, right? Yeah. Like we keep turning Parvo dogs away. I don't think that looks good for any of us. But if we're letting the people come in, we're doing the best we can. And we're going to shorten the hospitalization stay. We should be able to get the price, the cost of treating Parvo way down. That's going to be revolutionary for veterinary medicine.
Yeah. And you think of all those patients that do have Parvo because they're puppies. The big concern that the pet parents have told me is like, I worry about the behavior. Like, I want to start socializing them. They need to go to puppy classes. I want to teach them commands. Yeah. I want to bond with them. I mean, this is a much bigger conversation than what you really think about. Because I remember having cases of Parvo when it was weeks where they were just not back to normal. And talk about what a disruption of the human-animal bond that they have. And then let alone training. I mean, to me, that's where I do say this is going to be a huge game changer for how we treat canine parvovirus.
I totally agree. And here's the other thing. It's not only the disruption in the human-animal bond, it's a disruption in your veterinary team bond. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if you're the owner of a practice and you're turning away Parvo puppies, that has deleterious effects on your staff. They're looking at you going, you got to be kidding me. We're not going to help a sick puppy. I mean, you really got to think about that. My strategy was always let them come in. We'll do the best we can. Let them pay what they can. I'm not the owner of the practice anymore. And I understand that. But I think the goodwill that you get is more important than, you know, how many Parvo cases. You're not seeing hundreds of Parvo cases. You're probably seeing five. There's a big chance to get our staff back on board and really get back to what all of us are all about. And that is our veterinary team helping animals. And I think that's the unsaid part of Parvo. I think when we're turning people away, we're not letting them come in basically because of monetary issues. That erodes the veterinary team bond, which is very valuable to us, as you know. I mean, our team, how we all feel about each other is really important. And then that trickles down certainly to the human-animal bond. And once again, these are puppies. These are our most vulnerable population. And to sit and watch a puppy die because they have something and we're not even going to try, it just goes against everything we're all about.
I put that on a list too when we talk about things that disrupt the hospital. That's a classic culture killer right there.
Absolutely.
And classic culture killer where you can have employees that leave your practice because of that. And it creates such disruption too. And, you know, one real critical question I want to ask you is how do you see canine Parvo monoclonal antibody therapy added into today's treatment regimen for parvovirus, either hospitalized or outpatient cases?
So we're 24 ER, so we're general specialty in ER, so we kind of see everything. I like the idea, and here's the other thing I'll tell you with Parvo. It's much more common than we think. People call us on the phone, oh yeah, we're not really taking any new patients because of all the stigma that we already talked about. So a lot of times these poor owners are stuck going to a specialty ER practice and the bill's $10,000. They're like, I can't do that. With the Parvo monoclonal antibody, my prediction, I could be wrong, but I don't think I am, I think it turns the treatment of parvo back to the general practice. And I think even if you're not overnight care and the people aren't going to be able to afford overnight care, you can do your best job by putting an IV catheter and giving them a bolus of fluids, giving them the parvo monoclonal antibody treatment, giving them some Sereni and sub-Q fluids, and then seeing how they are the next day, sending them home. That's going to be more common. Clearly, if you have puppies that are hypoglycemic, neutropenic, you know, septic, they're going to need to be in a 24-hour facility. But a lot of parvo puppies never get treated and they get euthanized because that's not an option. I think this product will put treatment of parvo back into the general practitioner's hand. And I think that's going to be good for everybody. I think it's going to be more accessible. And when you look at the cost, and I kind of know what the cost of this product is, but I am not saying anything because I don't want to get quoted on it. But it should make it much more affordable. And we should be able to give the clients a reasonable idea what it's going to cost. And I'll just throw a number out. I'm making this up, kind of. It'd be nice to say to a client, hey, this is a very serious disease and it could be 5 days in the hospital. But, you know, if you guys can come up with $1,500 or $1,000, we can do our best chance and have a pretty good chance of treating this. Is that something that you guys could do? Because right now it could be anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000 or $10,000. Right. And I think that stops a lot of people from even trying. And I guess what I'm saying, Adam, is for God's sake, with this product, at least we can try to treat parvo. Let's not just not treat them. And this product is that chance. Nothing's a silver bullet, but this is the closest thing we have. And it's something new. And I think this is a great opportunity to reestablish the human animal bond, the bond back in our practices of why we're vets and techs in the first place. And also to our front pork customer service people on the phone. I mean, you think they like telling someone, oh, you don't have $5,000. Sorry, we can't have your sick puppy that you guys love and your kids love come in. I think this is an opportunity to get back to medicine and doing something good. And I'm hoping that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, I love that. And I think from a couple of things that you said there, one, from a social media perspective, I know we live in a world where clients are just like, you know, willing to unfortunately sometimes bash you or whatever because they're being turned away, which happens a lot. That's probably one of the biggest reasons why clients go on social media is because they get turned away. When you're working with the client, especially for something like this with parvovirus, I mean, talk about team morale for your client, for your team from the right, from the front to the back end of your team. Everybody feels like they're in it to win it. And just like having great positive outcomes and giving control back to the generalists. I think, just like you said, I think it's so powerful.
That's awesome. And you're right on. And my thing is, we got to get off this where we're generalists and we can't treat anything. I'm sorry, maybe just because I'm an old vet. We should be able to treat a parvo case. I mean, come on. And now you got a brand new treatment. And what's nice is, you know, now we're going to start talking about how we treat a parvo. We got something new. We're going to go back to fluid therapy. We're going to go back to monitoring the CBC and getting back to what we should have been doing all along. And like you said, social media, this product's going to be all over social media.
It is.
So you better have it. And the one thing I think is really interesting in this product is the way it comes. I mean, this has to be frozen at minus 15 degrees centigrade, 5 degrees Fahrenheit. So they develop mailing box that's its own. It's never been done before. It's a box that remains frozen that you're going to put into a chest freezer and then thaw it out. They had to do a lot of thinking on how to even get this product into our hands. So I guess what I'm saying is the excuses are over. Time to start trying. I'm interested in, we're going to study is the ClinPath effects of this product. In other words, we're going to get this drug. We're going to monitor CBCs every day and maybe even interesting things like C-reactive proteins and see what happens as we're treating parvo. Because for me, that's going to tell us how quickly we can shorten this disease cycle and what's really going to happen. And we're not there yet. I think I'm literally going to have this product in the next couple of weeks. We'll be one of the first. And I'm really excited about it. But reading all the data, and I know a lot of the people that have studied it who are very well known in vet med, it looks really good. And I think it's going to be a huge help.
Excellent. Love that. And on the flip side, are there any, say, like contraindications or reasons not to include the canine parvo monoclonal antibody into a treatment regimen?
I mean, I don't want to say never and I won't, because you know how that goes.
Right.
But put it this way, on their initial studies, there were no reactions. Now we are injecting a monoclonal antibody, right? I mean, it's a protein. So the one thing I don't know that answer. I would look for hypersensitivity reactions, that type of thing, but nothing's been reported in their studies. But here's the thing, as you know, we got to get the product out in the field. What happens in real cases? What happens in puppies that have parvo, that have GI parasitism? What are going to be my suspect on this is I don't think there's going to be a lot of side effects. I could be wrong, but we've used the IgG really off label for immune mediated hemolytic anemia for 10 years. We haven't had a problem. If you look at a drug like Cytopoint, we've used it heavily, really like that. I personally haven't seen it, really not a whole lot's reported. So I don't think we're going to know till we get it out there in the field, but the reports look good on it. I haven't used it. We'll have to see.
Yeah. And communicating this strategy, you know, how do you communicate effectively the strategy to clients who are obviously they're very emotional when they're being getting hit with that diagnosis that their puppy has it? And, you know, concerned, I know you talked earlier about financial responsibility. So what are some things that you would say to a pet parent about
that? Yeah, I think what I would say is, and one is, I love what you said, Adam, and you're right on. Adam, the social media, the people are already going to be reading about this. They're going to look up parvo and this is going to pop up. They're going to know more than we are. Which
can I just tell you really quick about that? I mean, when I go on TikTok live streams with the pet parents, they know so much about this monoclonal antibody already. So to the listeners, I'm telling you, they know, they're asking about it. They're doing their research. They're familiar with monoclonal antibodies on the human side. So not all clients would be like, what is this? They'd be like, I know about this. Talk to me about
it. Absolutely. You know? I think veterinarians are going to be very surprised because they're going to realize that people are like, well, you know, I would like to know what the white count is every day. Veterinarians are going to be like, well, I don't know. You better know what you're talking about. So here's what I would tell the pet parent. Hey, this is the first USDA approved product we have for actual treatment of the virus. And what this is designed to do, you know, use COVID as much as you want to, right? This is a virus. We're trying to stop the virus before it gets into the cells. And if we can do that, we're going to shorten the severity of the disease very significantly. That's the whole strategy. If we can do that, then we're going to prevent it a lot of the horrible things that these poor puppies go through, vomiting and diarrhea. I mean, you're still going to have some with this with parvo anyway. But if we can shorten the severity, we're going to have a lot better chance of being successful treating this. We're going to shorten the hospitalization stay. And most importantly, we're going to be able to get your puppy home as soon as possible because we'd rather have them at home. And then we're going to, you know, we need to worry about other puppies around that puppy, right?
Right.
We have to educate clients that this is a virus that lives long in the environment. I mean, this is a non-envelope virus, so it's hard to kill. So we're going to have to talk about that. And then the other thing I did want to throw in there, since this is a monoclonal antibody, we're going to have to learn a lot about what do we do about vaccinating this puppy after they go home? Because there's a chance this is going to wipe out the maternal antibody. So we are going to want to, after this puppy's through the parvo, we are going to want to start the vaccines back again. And I think we'll need to learn a little bit, like how far out do we want to vaccinate him with the distemper parvo vaccine? My gut feeling would probably be, you know, maybe out 20 weeks. That's something we have to learn because this could wipe out the vaccine on parvo. Right. We're giving him the antibody, but it could wipe it out. So we are going to have to come up with some protocols on what we're going to do as far as vaccinating this puppy after they go home.
Yeah.
So we'll need to keep giving them vaccines. But here's what's going to happen on social media. And I'm happy about social media on this one because it's going to get us to realize there's a new treatment and we're going to just quit saying no. Like, let's get back to being doctors and treat something that we should be able to have a lot better success on. And that's going to bond. Nothing bonds the client to your practice more than something like this, as you know.
Absolutely. And I think the outcomes and the client testimonials are going to be enormous on this. And I do think that that's going to stem this momentum of like, wow, when I think of like rescue groups that happen to have some, you know, parvo cases, they're coming in. They're going to be your cheerleaders for this. Yeah.
Here's my thing. And, you know, you don't want to tell people that, oh, your puppy still couldn't die, right? I mean, you could still die. Right. This is a serious disease. But here's what I love about this. We're going to try. We're going to try to treat this. We have something new. There's no guarantees. But you know what? This is a puppy we're going to try and do everything that we can. I think you leave it open to that. But what I'm excited about, and rescues are near and dear to my heart. I've always worked with rescues, and they're amazing. you know, the rescue people give so much, and they can be our best advocates or our best critics. Because a lot of the rescues under our care, we can say, listen, you guys, you know, come on over, let's put a catheter and let's do a treatment. And then you guys can treat it in your isolation area. I could definitely see that happening. It goes back to what you said earlier, to the, what am I going to say to the pet parents? Hey, we have something new that we can try. It looks really good. But the key is we're going to try.
Yeah.
We're not going to blow you off and try to send you to the ER practice. I mean, they're already busy enough. So yeah. I think that's the important part of it.
And you look at it too, to our colleagues tuning in. I mean, this is the beauty behind veterinary medicine. It's how we advance. I love the science. We're scientists by trade. So when we have great studies, the data, we're always looking for that. I mean, boom. I think this is, like I said, magic in a bottle. That's definitely worth trying. So I think it's great.
This is what it's all about. And, you know, for me, I'm in the practice world and I live in the ClinPath world. That's what I like. So yeah. I'll give a plug on the company that we formed, Laboratory Retrievers, Adam. So that's Dr. Dean Acola and Rebar, who are world-known clinical pathologists. I hang out with smart people and then I translate for them. And the reason I'm saying that is this is a perfect disease, and you're going to see a lot of cool things in ClinPath that are going to come out in the next year. And for me, this is a disease that screams ClinPath, because we're going to be able to use the hematology data on these puppies. And that's going to tell us earlier when these animals are going to be able to go home. And Dr. Dean Acola, who is my guru, his most famous quote is, and to me is important, is animals can't hide their objective data. So our patients hide pain and everything else. They can't hide their neutrophil count. They can't hide their hematocrit. So using ClinPath for this disease and other diseases should tell us a lot. And also remember comorbidities with this disease. They can have GI parasitism. You can have intussusceptions with parvo. But, you know, if you're having a puppy that you swear, God, this puppy's got to have parvo. The ELISA came back negative twice. The white count's low. What's going on? Think about other things like salmonella, distemper, campylobacter. Don't just get tunnel vision, intussusception. I always kind of keep those diseases in the back of my mind. But use the lab data to help tell whether the patient's getting better.
Great conversation, my friend. Dr. Metzger, thank you so much for joining us. This is awesome.
Adam, thanks. Let's do it again. That was really fun.
I love it. I love your passion. It comes right across. I love it. It's the best.
Same thing to you.
Yeah, awesome. I love it. Thank you, my friend. And thank you again to our friends from Elanco for tuning in. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to claim your CE credit hour for listening to this podcast via dvm360.com/flex, where you can register or log into your free account. Then select the CE podcast and follow the online prompts. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we hope to see you soon. And remember to always stay pawsome.